All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Wednesday, September 13th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Now there's time to get a free three-day trial. The seven-day free trial is over, but it's still time for a free three-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That'll give you optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL, MLB, NBA, which is only a few. Like
NHL, when that comes, Doug. Jeez. Yeah, it's all these sports for one low price? Oh, my gosh.
It's crazy. It's got to be the best deal in the industry. It actually sort of is.
And it's mostly, you guys should be grateful because it's mostly that we're too lazy to change our prices. So
it's not mostly. It feels like 100% that we're just too lazy. This comes up in like team meetings all the time. And our other partner Blake is the one that's always pushing to raise the price. And he's the smart one of the group. We probably should be raising the price, and then we just ignore him and just keep going.
Yeah, at 29. We will raise the price. I think actually you've heard it here now. We'll raise the price before basketball season. So.
Now even more incentive to get in to lock your $29.95 a month rate into it. Now that we've finally decided at the urging.
It used to happen. I mean, we used to charge $19.95, $14.95 for all these packages. So it will go up again. I suggest getting it now while the getting is good.
Yeah. Okay. So free 3-day trial, then just $29.95 a month
for now. After.
And you're all good to go. Buddy, I was at a concert last night. I'm feeling a little bit tired, but I have to say, I went to see the Arcade Fire concert. I G-chatted you beforehand, and I don't know, what did you think about this? What was your general reaction to what I said? I said, I'm about to dodge, because I didn't really want to go to the concert. My wife did. And I was like, I'm about to dodge a bullet here. My wife's too sick to go. And your reaction, tell everyone what your reaction to that, to my sentiment about that was.
Well, you sent me a text, a specific message you said was, one effing time, dealer. But you said the nasty part. I don't want to say that myself because I don't talk that way. But I said, huh? Aren't you excited to go? No, I don't really like them. My wife loves them, but she's sick, which of course is bad for her. And then I quote, one effing time, dealer, let my wife be too sick to go see the band she loves. Maybe that sounds worse than it actually is. And he said, yeah, you got it right. So now this is the podcast where we read our old G-chats to each other. DFSR.com. You can hear not only our old G-chats, but also great football advice.
So I don't ask for one-time dealer on like Francisco Lindor home runs or like Jordy Nelson touchdowns.
No, you really don't.
I ask for also on things like life things. Like I don't really want to go into, I really just don't want to go into
which
the
makes city. More sense really, right? Isn't our time the most scarce thing that we have, Doug? So the fact that you were going into a concert that you weren't really excited about, I get you for sure.
Real quick, this is the last thing about the concert, but it was looking real grim for me because we got there. Another crazy couple was in our seat, and they were like the crazy people that were like cheering too loud for the opening act when we were like really kind of far away. They were also like, not that they were, just were a little bit big, and these seats were small, and they were sitting on our seats, and it was looking real grim because the music was not that good. And then Grandmaster Flash came on and just played basically cover songs that he asked every single cover song for people to raise their hands up. And he played, if he said raise your hand up 45 times or put your hands up in the air 45 times, I think that number would be low, to the point where I just kept making jokes about saying like, he can't keep asking us. Like, it just, the hands keep going up. He has to ask us to do something new. So it was looking real bad, but then the concert ended up being real good. I'm still running good in life, I think, in overall. All right, let's get into NFL. We put our cash game picks up last night and taking a look at who we think some of the top points per dollar plays are going to be per position. It's always a little funny to do it now because we kind of reserve, as always when we do this podcast or this specific one, we reserve the right to kind of change some of these new information comes during the week. NFL is usually pretty good with their news cycle, so just being that there's really kind of so few guys that matter from a fantasy standpoint helps, and then it's just the time between the games helps. So I think we're gonna kind of land on this range of guys, and I feel pretty comfortable with it. And I think it's going to also be interesting to see like where this range of guys lands with the rest of the industry, because unlike last week where it was just crazy chalk and there was a long runway into Sunday, and I think we just had enough information.
I think there was just not good pricing based on the matchups. Right. By not good, I mean inefficient pricing. Like, you know, again, when we were at the DraftKings live kickoff event, the everyone in that room was playing the exact same guys. That much I could say. So, yeah, going into this week, though, but you think that's going to change up for this week?
Well, I don't know. I'm going to spend today reading some other, you know, outfits and kind of looking at what other people have just in terms of where they see value lying. I always think things are so clear, crystal clear, because I spend so much time in our projection system, but then I just go and look at other people's, and sometimes, especially in a week like this, it is a little different. All right, we'll get to it, because it's not the same for every player. I think some plays will be a little bit more popular than others. Let's start at quarterback. I wrote a couple guys. I wrote some expensive guys here with the idea that we maybe be able to get some savings elsewhere. I put Rodgers at the top here too, and made the joke to you yesterday that, you know, if you're a DFSR reader, unless the matchup's horrible or he gets up to like 10,000, enjoy 16 straight weeks of Aaron Rodgers. Like, I just don't know what else to do. He's just so good. And I know the week one was slightly disappointing in terms of his overall output. He was still kind of fine, but just didn't get there with touchdowns. Do you see him as going into this matchup? Do you see, if we liked him last week, we can't like him less this week against Atlanta, right?
Yeah, I don't think we can like him less against this week or this week against Atlanta. You know, everything from Rodgers' first week looked good to me. You know, 67% completion rate looks pretty much fine. Yards per attempt at 7.4, totally reasonable. Again, it's only a one-week sample size, so even if he were terrible, we wouldn't care about it too much. And the fact is that there's basically two games you can pick from this week if you want to go for the highest totals as far as Vegas sees it, and this one is one of it. So, you know, the Green Bay is on the wrong end of this game, and at least in terms of spread. Atlanta's favored -3 here, but I guess that would lead you to believe that either Aaron Rodgers or Matt Ryan could be playable, but the Packers are so much more reliant on the pass that I would definitely lean in Rodgers' direction here.
Yeah, this one seems pretty easy. I think the game has like the shootout style, just kind of game script going in. There's nothing to really believe that it's not going to go that way, just the way these two teams are set up. He's an accurate passer that can also run. He has all the weapons. And again, the price is not in a place where I'm worried that it's crushing me on salary cap here, because I do think there's some other cheaper guys. So, I'm for cash games. I think just from a safety perspective, I don't see myself pivoting away from Rodgers. It'll be interesting to see where the rest of the rest of the industry kind of comes down on him. But to me, he seems pretty clear cut. After him, I put Russell Wilson. I'm less excited about this one. I like the matchup. He was not good week one. The Packers defense is not a great D. I know it was going on the road for week one, and there was just kind of issues all over the industry. And actually, I guess we could talk about this now, or maybe we could wait to our game by game breakdown. But a ton of stuff has been come out this week about just like offensive line play in general throughout the NFL, and how offensive line play was just bad, basically. That was what was a lot of it was leading to the low totals that we saw in week one.
We watched every game because we happened to be in the position to do so. And there were just people living in the backfield. I mean, the reason there were so many interceptions, turnovers, defensive touchdowns. How many teams scored a defensive touchdown in week one?
A lot.
It was totally crazy. And most of that comes from broken plays. And most broken plays come from bad offensive line play. So, yeah, I'm totally down with that assessment.
Yeah, and Evan Silva, who's obviously great for Roto-World, he made a point kind of comparing it to quarterback play sort of writ large, in that there just simply aren't, and it's not that anyone can be blamed, there just simply aren't enough good offensive linemen right now. In the same way you can say there just aren't enough good quarterbacks to just field every team in the NFL, he kind of made that same comparison to offensive line and said there's not that much these teams can do, there's just not enough guys. Like, if you're the team that ends up with Scott Tolzien, I know he was a backup, but if you're the team that ends up with Scott Tolzien as your quarterback, like, you're just dead. And like, at some point you just run out of guys that can block, and he kind of made that comparison for O-line. I've never really seen that comparison made, but it seemed pretty astute. Wilson did struggle with that problem in week one. The Packers were just all over him. The completion rate was completely garbage at 50%. His game was bad all around. But he does face the Niners this week, and the matchup's much better. The Seahawks are favored. The run game for them looks really weird. Are you on with Wilson here, even though his week one was pretty bad?
Yeah, I think he's an interesting high upside GPP play. I mean, Wilson is a guy who you can take as a naked quarterback for tournaments, i.e. not stacking him with anyone else because of his running potential. I think we also need to not get too carried away with the poor week one. Like, he's a very well-established kind of 63% completion rate guy, even higher in the last two seasons. And one bad game against Green Bay is nothing to make me panic for a guy who's just 29 years old. You know, quarterbacks tend to have a lot more longevity than that. Maybe the legs leave at some point, but the arm shouldn't doesn't really deteriorate that quickly. So I think he is still a good play. He's a very good value against the San Francisco team, who just doesn't really boast too great a defense. You know, they were much worse against the run last year than the pass, but a lot of that is because they were just behind by so much that teams really didn't have the incentive to pass against them. So I do like Wilson. I don't know that I would like list him as the second overall quarterback play this week. I mean, I know he's coming in relatively high from on a points per dollar basis in our system right now, but I don't like him as much as, say, Tom Brady, for instance. I think you will see a lot of people go in the direction of Brady, given that he's only 100 more than Rodgers, but the Pats are projected to score even more points.
Yeah, no, Brady was a guy that I just got back late and didn't write up. he was on the list. he's in our strongly consider, and my goal was to post the article and then go back and write him up. You threw in a couple lines about him this morning. No, I'm totally on that. I do think Brady probably strikes me as a little safer here, considering the matchup against New Orleans. I always kind of default when they're close to taking the quarterback that actually puts things together with his legs, because there is going to be the times where he scrambles in for a touchdown. Brady is just really not.
Or even just like when we were watching the Packers game, Rodgers runs for 11 yards and that's 30 passing yards, you know, like right. That's, yeah, that stuff gets.
And Wilson has that in him, and Brady does. Now Brady's Brady and he's, you know, accurate, and he is much better. Well, not much better coach. He's has a better coach and probably a better scheme. They struggled in week one too, and they actually just struggled on an offensive side, especially in the comeback zone, which actually they're kind of built for that also. I wonder how much losing Edelman hurts him, though it seems like Cooks and some of the other pieces they have should be able to make up for it. Are you worried at all from what you saw from him from week one in terms of just like another year older? You know, he's got a lot of miles on him too. He's got like seasons worth of playoff games on his legs too. So he's sure. You can kind of look at how many regular seasons he has, and he probably has, I don't know what, like two extra seasons on his legs just in playoff games, something like that.
I mean, he's 40 years old now. He's even older than you, Doug, which is really something for a guy to be out there on the field. Like, can you picture? I mean, I remember hearing about this when I was a young man listening to sports analysts, but can you imagine just going out on the field and just getting tackled by these monsters every week at like our age even?
I can barely get down the steps with my ankle. You know what I mean? So like,
that's what I'm saying. Like, after standing up at the concert for a long time last night.
Oh, yeah. I stood up for 2 straight hours at that concert. Those guys, the Arcade Fire. Bro, I had the energy, man, and I couldn't feel like it wasn't my
deck. I was kind of popping up and down a little bit. My back is sore, my ankle's sore. But yeah, with Brady, it's interesting because, like, at some point, we saw this with Peyton Manning, right? Like, at some point, people never want to admit it, but at some point, you're just not the MVP of the league anymore. Now, last year, he was absolutely phenomenal, and I don't know that you would want to just go ahead and wager your life against the dollar that it would be this season, but I think there are signs. I mean, I think another one of the big signs for me is actually the Pats' red zone distribution, because last year we saw LeGarrette Blount get a ton of touches inside the 5-yard line. We saw Mike Gillisley go out there and punch in 3 touchdowns, the only 3 touchdowns for the Pats in their opener. I don't know that that's what they'll do going forward, but the fact that they're leaning in that direction, especially because they don't have a really good short yardage guy, like Welker's gone, obviously Edelman's not there. Maybe they don't rely on Amendola that way just yet, or Brandon Cooks or whomever. And if that's the case, they just could keep running the ball inside the 5, and that would really significantly hurt Brady's value. You know, I think a lot of people have him projected to continue to go forward as this high touchdown guy, but if he's going to be more like the, you know, 2 touchdowns a game or less kind of guy rather than the 3 touchdown a game guy that we got used to in his prime, then that could be a problem. So I think there's enough question marks that you can that it's a discussion between Rodgers and Brady. I do think that Vegas, you know, being so high on the Pats this week, the narrative of them coming back from a bad week one, the fact that the Saints were one of the worst defenses in the league last season, and that not only are they a bad defense, but they also play a very fast pace since they pass the ball so much. I think all that taken together leads me to think that Brady would probably be higher owned than Rodgers, I would guess.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, the Saints Sam Bradford's an accurate quarterback, but they made Sam Bradford look like Tom Brady last week. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens in that matchup. It's perfectly reasonable to consider the Patriots putting up the most points on the board this week in a bounce back game. And I don't know if I agree with you about him being higher owned, but it probably is closer than I originally would have thought it would have been. Let's go on to running back. Running back is where I think that we're going to see running back and wide receiver. I do think we're going to see some interesting ownerships this week. You know, obviously last week it was all DJ and Bell. DJ is hurt and he's out for many months and possibly the whole season, depending on where the Cardinals are in terms of their record when he finally gets healthy with the wrist. And then Le'Veon Bell obviously was man, some kind of garbage in week one against the Browns. We did lower Bell a little bit in terms of our projection system, just because it is a little disturbing when you have just the kind of volume he received. Now, would he be a candidate to bounce back and get sort of, you know, those 26 around-ish touches that we had him projected for in early, or, you know, going into week one? Possibly, but we did lower him a little bit. Now, I was struggling a little bit to write up. I thought about writing him up, but I didn't love the Minnesota defense. I ended up writing up Ezekiel Elliott because of the high-priced, the upper-tier guys, and I would consider that to be Bell, Elliott, McCoy, and then a little bit below, this on FanDuel, Devontae Freeman, and then the list kind of drops off from there. The reason I wrote him up in that group is because he seems, more than any of these other guys, that his volume and usage is the most locked in. Like, now we are a full season of his rookie season, and last game against the week one against the Giants, of just seeing that the Cowboys playing with him has not changed, right? It is Elliott left, Elliott center, sure, Elliott up the middle. Like, there's just no other quarterback, or excuse me, no other running back in that group seems to be as, quote, safe when it comes to that. And I end up writing him up. I don't love the matchup with Denver, but I chose him for that. It was like more like I chose the volume over the matchup here, and it's a little close, but I still like him for cash games.
Yeah, I think it's pretty reasonable. I mean, if you just take him and Bell and compare the two after the week one, you saw Elliott getting a lot of touches, 29 touches, I think it was, in a game where he should get 29 touches. But you saw Bell get like 14 touches in a game where he should have gotten 29.
Exactly.
Touches.
Like,
I don't. That's like the weird thing. Like, we don't want to overreact to bad performance, especially on like a yards per carry basis. But when the plan doesn't seem to be to use a guy, that's where my, you know, little antenna sticks up. So I don't know that this is the week where you want to pay up at running back. You know, that seemed to be last week. I mentioned this yesterday, but this could just be the week where you want to pay down. If you elect to pay up, it's hard to imagine not playing Elliott. I mean, even, and I don't want to overreact, and I think that, you know, we can be accused of doing so, but it's not like Bell has an easy matchup either. So, you know, if Bell were going up against Cleveland again or whatever, I would probably just run him out there. But the fact is that both Elliott and Bell have team, or they have matchups against teams that allowed the third and first fewest rushing yards of the season last year. So that's going to be pretty problematic.
Right, for our system right now on FanDuel, Elliott is showing up in the top lineup, but if you run, you know, 25 lineups or so, you see that he's only in 40%. So he's not one of those guys. And by the way, going back to that, Rodgers is kind of in that category too. He's only at 20% of lineups. But Elliott is not like, it's not like our system sees him as a clear-cut play. I think it sees him as, at some point, you're just trying to get some raw points in onto some of these lineups, because like I said, there is going to be some savings we're going to get further down the chain here. But and that's where I kind of see Elliott land. The other guy I kind of see in that, he's a tier below Elliott in terms of price, but I think he has sort of the same safety and volume as Melvin Gordon. So Melvin Gordon's actually, he came off a week facing that Denver defense we were just saying Elliott's up against. He was not great. He wasn't bad, all things considered. He got a ton of touches, so he got 23 total touches. Only 75 total yards, did get into the end zone. Gets a much better matchup here against Miami. Miami obviously coming off the unlikely bye week in week one, where because they got kind of hurricaned out of their first game of the year. So this is going to be their first game, I was going to say, I almost said San Diego, whereas the Los Angeles, going to get used to that. The Los Angeles Chargers are now coming on their second week, maybe just a little more well-oiled. He's another guy. Like, you know, I was a little worried about his touches coming back from injury. Obviously, he came back injury-shortened season, but Chargers have kind of made it clear he's their guy again, and he was their guy last year too. So do you think he falls sort of in that maybe Elliott light category of not quite the volume and clearly not the talent, but is going to get a lot of touches and coming for cheaper than that kind of top tier?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I liked his involvement in the running game. I thought it was not a terrible performance against Denver, all things considered. I also really liked that he had 5 receptions for 25 yards and then that it was a receiving TD. Running backs who can catch touchdowns as well as run them in offer a different level of safety for us in a lot of ways, because like a lot of the issue, or a lot of the variance rather, that comes from running backs comes from when you get down in the red zone and then someone else scores the touchdown, whether it's because you're not the goal line back or because your team passes a lot once you get down there. But if you can have like kind of a Justin Forsett piece where you're going to catch a pass and run it into the touchdown, and then you'll also be the goal line back, it offers both an additional amount of upside and safety. So I think you take him away from Denver, you bring him up against Miami. I mean, we saw every team in the NFL look rusty coming into week one this year. You offered a question which I thought was interesting, which was, you know, is this just kind of a cultural decision by the NFL to not take the preseason seriously, so they're all going to be kind of like a little bit bad at first. I think if that's, you know, if that's even in play, I think it's a totally reasonable guess. Then I think the Chargers will have a leg up on Miami here, and their plan is to give the ball to Melvin Gordon. So I think that he makes a pretty good cash game play. It'll be weird. I mean, I like Melvin Gordon for this week. Would you feel excited to see him in your cash game lineups? Like, would that be the type of thing where you were like, yeah, baby, I'm just going to play Melvin Gordon and forget about it? Like, that doesn't seem that easy.
No, I don't think so. And I think that's the problem. People are going to come in with all their running backs. The running back was the position I struggled kind of the most with who to write up outside of the guy that we're going to talk about next. But and even he, I'm not sure it's going to be industry-wide. But no, I don't think so. I think the weirdness we're going to find here is that you're going to see some people sort of get overly excited about some of the rookie running back things that happen in week one, like with Hunt and Cook and Fournette. And I think people might go a little overboard, maybe correctly, like frankly. We're probably still hedging a little bit in terms of their overall usage on those three guys. McCaffrey, too. And actually, I take back what I said in the podcast yesterday about McCaffrey not being on the same level. He outsnapped Jonathan Stewart in week one. I didn't realize that. I was looking through that this morning. And he probably just maybe ran a little bit bad. So he probably is not too far away in terms of just usage on what we can see from those rookie running backs. He probably does fall into that class above, and just the overall output didn't end up being the same. No, I'm not going to be excited about it. I think it there's a very good chance it happens. And you know, Gordon is funny. Gordon was the 8th overall fantasy running back last year total, and he missed 3 games. So you know, you give him 3 more games. Sure. Bell missed a game too. That's a little bit wrong because Bell he missed 4 games. So anyway, he was a top 10 running back and missed 3 games last year. He was good, right? And if that's going to just be the same kind of thing, he was a little bit all over the place. He wasn't as safe on a week-to-week basis as some of these other guys in the same group. Some of these other guys had higher consistency ratings. But no, I'm not going to be excited about it. And at the same time, I kind of just want to trust the numbers here because, again, his usage is right up there with everyone else. The third guy I wrote up.
Yeah, so it's tricky. So let's compare him to a guy, because Melvin Gordon is kind of the old guy that we already know about, right? He's the guy who, you know, is not very exciting. You can be pretty sure he's not going to go out there and get like 200 yards and 3 touchdowns. Compare him to a guy like Dalvin Cook, who's kind of like middling in our system right now, right nearby Gordon in terms of overall points per dollar production. He's cheaper, so that would allow you to spend up elsewhere. And he's more exciting, right? Oh, yeah. Objectively, people are going to be a lot more excited to get him going into Pittsburgh than I think they will Melvin Gordon against Miami. So in your mind, like, would you guess that, who do you think has higher ownership, I guess, is my question? Dalvin Cook or Melvin Gordon going?
I think they'll probably be pretty even. I just think you're going to see low running back ownerships kind of across the board this week. I don't think you're going to see that like a chalky situation. That's a good question.
I think Dalvin Cook is cheap, dude. He's 6,700. So, well, this will be an interesting no halftime question then. So Gordon versus Cook straight up. If you saw that challenge come across, the no halftime waiver, I'll explain no halftime is in a second. Would you take that bet on Gordon, or do you feel like it's close enough to where you would just let it slide?
Well, explain no halftime first, and then I'll get my answer.
Okay, so no halftime is a great new app for daily fantasy sports players that allows people to play these kind of one-on-one challenges, right? So it's kind of like a challenge fantasy contest where you pick a player, you can pick someone that you think your guy is going to be better than, or you can just go onto their app and see what challenges are available, and you can play it for basically any amount of money. I don't know if there is a cap. Probably you won't get your $10,000 bet accepted, or $10,000 offer for a game of skill accepted, I should say. But they're a really cool app. If you go to nohalftime.com, you can download it. You can issue these challenges whenever your friends are talking smack or acting a fool and saying one guy is better than another or making some stupid bold prediction. It's great. Nohalftime.com, use promo code DFSR to get a 50% bonus up to $50 on your first deposit. So check them out and tell them we sent you. But yeah, so straight up, heads up, I see Gordon as a higher point total in our system than Cook, and it's even not even super close. It's separated by 2 points right now. But some of that is underpinned by our own carries assumptions, right? So is that the type of situation where you would be confident confident enough to take Gordon over Cook?
It'd be close for me. It wouldn't be like one of those complete lock situations that I would feel great about, but I think I would feel okay about it for a couple reasons. I'll be honest with you. In our system, we have him for, I did not plan this, but we have him for exactly the same usage. We have him both for 18 carries and 4 targets. So it actually doesn't rely on on whether or not we have one for the other. That's just kind of luck that just happened. But those are what we have him for carries and usage. you know, the things that Gordon here has going in his favor, he's a home favorite, which is historically much better for running backs. Is to be favored at home is just seems to play out better okay. over the aggregate for your game scripts, and that is the case. Whereas Gordon is, whereas Cook is a minus or a plus six underdog to Pittsburgh on the road. Now, is that because Vegas still trying to figure some of these teams out? For sure. It's a pretty big spread difference in terms of just like where one team is favored and one team's not. That's factored in there. I think almost on that alone, like even if I saw them as being equal, like if I saw it, that we had if we had them just projected for the same amount of points, all things equal, just seeing those two things would make me want to just lean in Gordon's way, just because I think the game script goes more in his favor. So no, I think I'd feel fairly confident about it. I think I would definitely get it accepted. Like if I put it on there.
I think you would too. I think it's really close. I mean, so the thing is, we also see that Cook is 900 less than Gordon. So I think it's pretty close from that perspective, from where I'm sitting. It's tricky because with Melvin Gordon, we have this pretty decently sized body of work, right? 456 carries at 3.7 yards per attempt, which is terrible yep. for a starting running back in the NFL. Like that's really lousy. But we do have the usage. You know, he averaged almost 20 carries a game last season, which, you know, if he had six more carries, he would have had 20 carries per game, which is excellent. He does throw in some receiving as well, which we always like to see. And that really matters, you know, like 41 receptions last season really matters as well. That's a lot of touching the ball. And in the modern NFL, that's very unusual. And we know that Dalvin Cook got it for week one, but we're really not sure what their plans are for him going forward. So my guess is, to lead it all back around, I think Cook has a significantly higher ownership percentage going into week two here, just based on people, you know, kind of surfing off the excitement of week one. But I think that Gordon is probably I think he's a stronger straight up points play. It's going to be close for me in terms of, you know, who's the better guy to actually stick in your fantasy lineups, because I do think you're going to be on an island a little bit with Gordon. And I don't think that you'll be on that. I think people just look at the 6,700 on Cook and they're like, that's cheap, I'll play him. That's what my gut tells me after doing this for.
Yeah, no, for sure. I get that. I will say that Cook, the last thing I'm going to say about Cook, and then if you can, I won't be the last word, guys. So if you want to say one more thing, feel free. And then those will be the last things we say.
No, you can be the last word.
So I will say that Cook's 25 total touches last week came in like the most perfect scenario ever for him. They were winning. They were on the turf. Like, they were winning for most of the game. Like, they were able to run downhill. And he got 25 total touches. Whereas Gordon, they were losing, and he still got 23 touches. And so I just think against a slower team in Denver, like, so the pace per game, the pace per play is actually much slower.
Right, they were like obligatory runs, right? They were like, well, we have to run the ball at least.
Exactly, like, because Denver, when you get pace of play considerations brought in, Denver plays pretty damn slow, whereas New Orleans plays pretty fast. So I think all this said is Cook got a dream scenario for him for his first week, and Gordon just got a regular scenario, and they weren't so far off from each other. Yeah. Gordon has a better matchup. The last guy I wrote up that I'm actually the most excited about this week, he's the guy that I'm most curious about where he's going to come in ownership, is Ty Montgomery. So Ty Montgomery was a guy we wondered a little bit about because he was finally fully transitioning into a full running back one going into the season for Green Bay, a team that loves to pass. He entered the game against Seattle. So, you know, we had him for moderate usage, though it didn't go completely overboard. He ended up going, now he had a very similar Melvin Gordon-y kind of game where he ran 19 times for 54 yards. Now we know that Seattle front four is really damn good. So 19 for 54 against that Seattle defense is not something that I'm too worried about. 19 for 54 and a touchdown, plus four receptions for 39 yards. So 23 total touches in that offense. Now he, along with Rodgers, goes and gets the Falcons, and we saw what Bears running backs did to the Falcons last week in both stages of the game. I mean, Tarik Cohen was the play of the week, basically, kind of running the same sort of things, like running out routes out of the backfield. They targeted him a lot. The Falcons really couldn't do anything to stop him, and Jordan Howard was able to run somewhat effectively. Montgomery's damn cheap, man. He's only 6,100 or something like that on FanDuel. Like, or 6,500. That's like almost for running backs in this kind of usage. That's like punt play. It's not punt play in the strict definition of the word, but the fact that he's 2,000 or 1,000 to 2,000 less than some of the other guys we talked about, like, he's 100% across every lineup for me for cash games this week. Do you think we're too bullish here, or do you think it's kind of on point?
No, I think it's pretty much on point. It's interesting because he actually had the exact same week one as Melvin Gordon in almost the exact scenario.
That's what I'm saying. Like
obligatory runs against a great defense. Like they really are. The analog there are pretty dramatic. And even just generally speaking, he cuts a very similar profile to Gordon. The thing I like about Montgomery is that he's just had a better track record as a running back in the NFL. Like when he gets the ball, he can produce with it. I think he has a better matchup this week as well. Vegas likes this as one of the highest total games of the week. I think you take all those factors together. Montgomery, if he's not chalk, I would be excited. Like if I started on Sunday and lineups were locked in and it was game on, and I mean, you wouldn't see this right away because it's the night game, but if I saw Montgomery was like a 10% start, I would be like, damn, yes, we got our money and really good here. Versus Gordon, if I saw he was a 10% start, I'd be like, I would just be waiting for the text from you. Said something like Melvin Gordon Island. Right. All right. Here we go. So that's my gut, my old blink test says that Montgomery.
Stacking Montgomery and Rodgers to me in cash games makes just 100% sense this week. I think that you're getting so much.
Yeah,
you're just getting so much of their production. You know, we don't know exactly. They didn't have any goal line carries last week, so we don't know exactly what the Green Bay plan down there is, but. You have to figure it's one of these two guys. They didn't really have, they weren't incentivized to run anybody else out of the backfield. Jamal Williams only had two carries. So no one is challenging Montgomery at this point for any of the work out of the backfield. I love it. I'm going to play him in 100% of all my cash games. I think he's a great tournament play as well. And if I felt like that ownership was, he'd be the kind of guy where if I felt like the ownership was going to be, you know, sub 50% or maybe even less in cash games, which I think it will be, I'd be incentivized to put in more like this week to buy in more just because I think there's significant edge on what he's getting. His volume numbers just look the same as some of these other elite guys we're talking about, and he's just so much less. All right, we've been at this for a while. Let's get into wide receivers. Wide receivers is another one where we talked a lot about this yesterday. A lot of huge target guys from week one. A lot of guys had difficulty converting on those targets. I'm not so worried about what that means for some of them, except that I wanted to see the teams kind of had the same plan. I wrote Jordy Nelson to start. Jordy Nelson falls into the Aaron Rodgers category of if he's going to be in this range in terms of price. He's the other guy that you can just get ready to see 16 straight weeks of in our picks because he's just about as consistent as it gets. Now, the question here is, would you feel comfortable for cash games playing a stack of Rodgers, Montgomery, and Nelson all together in your cash games? Like, would you be comfortable rolling all three of those Green Bay guys out in the same lineup for cash games? Not for tournaments. I don't think that makes sense, but for cash games.
I think you could do it for either, to be honest. I think they're both excellent plays. I think Nelson... to me, in a matchup against Atlanta here, he could be like 10% more expensive, so like 8,900, and I think he could still be a play. I think he's criminally underrated right now across the industry. I think actually his week one performance was one of the more impressive ones considering the defense he was up against and considering that all of a sudden the whole NFL looks terrible offensively. The fact that he was still able to go out there for 7 and 79 with a touchdown just looks great to me. So, yeah, the targets weren't totally there, but the conversion was as elite as ever. I think that Seattle is obviously much more focused on him. Like I know Cobb out targeted him in week one, but I think that turns around here against Atlanta. Atlanta has struggled against wide receiver ones in the past, and I think just Nelson's a phenomenal play. So I would be happy.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you were worried about the 13 targets for Cobb, but it doesn't seem like that's a concern. It's not a concern for me. I think it was the way that they were, the Seattle, without like breaking down game tape, because that's not my forte at all. I suspect this is because of the way that they had Cobb lined up against, you know, where they were isolating Sherman and then bring him over to Cobb over to the other side of the field along with Nelson. And I think that, my guess is that's how it kind of worked out. So I'm not going to go overboard on the targets for Cobb. The other two receivers that we had here that I kind of put in the same category together, Amari Cooper and Michael Thomas. Cooper gets the Jets. Thomas gets the Patriots. Both saw targets in week one. We talked yesterday, and you know it's been much talked about how Cooper just didn't convert three straight touchdown passes on a drive where he just completely dropped all three of them. That being said, he was far and away the highest targeted guy on the Raiders, now facing a Jets team that looked like complete garbage against the Bills. And then Michael Thomas in what could be a catch-up game against the Patriots. Could you see playing both of these guys? It's going to be getting a little weird with price at this point with them. If you had to choose Cooper or Thomas, who would you like better in their matchups?
Yeah, it's tricky. Cooper, Thomas, and Nelson all have this, basically the exact same price. So it's going to be real tough to play all three. If I was picking between these two guys, I think I'd take Michael Thomas. I think we saw the Chiefs expose that Pats defense in week one. The Jets, while they're not necessarily an elite D, they're still fine, I think. I mean, I think they're still, in my mind, that game rates to be a little slower and grindier than the New England game. I think there's going to be some incentive for Oakland to just kind of get a lead and sit on it versus New Orleans. I think they're going to be clawing for their life. So given that these guys are very close in our system, I think I would gently lean in Thomas's direction. I do think Cooper has tremendous upside. I mean, not only the looks, but the red zone looks. Granted, he didn't convert on them, and that might have them seeing visions of Crabtree dancing in their head for situations like that, which is kind of weird, by the way. Like, that's kind of the exact yardage that Crabtree
and did all last year. That was with Crabtree, like...
That's what I mean. Yeah, I'm not an NFL coach, but that was kind of perplexing to me that they just kept pounding Cooper. But who knows? You know, they have a better sense of that than I do. I still do like Thomas quite a bit here. I mean, I think that we're yet to see his full form in a Saints team without Brandon Cooks, and that could definitely start in what's not only a very fast pace, but very high.
Yeah, my other concern with Cooper would be that game just gets completely out of hand. Right now, Oakland's minus 14 against the Jets, and if they're just up early, then we're just going to see Marshawn Lynch probably.
Yeah, and that's a really bad spot for just a downfield receiver like Cooper as well. He's not really a possession guy. He's kind of one of these boomer bust, T.Y. Hilton, Mike Evans types, and in that's like the minus 14 favorite. He could explode for 200 yards and three touchdowns and be the reason they blow them out, or you know, he could have 43 yards on two catches in the first quarter, but then they're up by 10 and he never touches the ball again, you know. I go back and forth. I think I would certainly lead Thomas.
Yeah, and I do think the targets will be there for him in that matchup against the Patriots. I did write up also a couple cheap guys in Allen Hurns and Marquise Lee. I mean, they have Blake Bortles as their quarterback, which is never good. They're both coming cheap. Allen Robinson vacates a lot of targets from that offense when he's not on the field. They have Leonard Fournette now, so they can probably rely a little bit more on the run. But for DraftKings, both of them are coming under 4,000, and you have to suspect, man, if they had any other quarterback, they wouldn't be 4,000, so whatever. I can't do that like chicken or egg thing. But you have to suspect that at some point there's going to be targets to go around for some of these cheap receivers with Robinson not there. Would you feel comfortable on DraftKings? I'm not really advocating it on FanDuel, but on DraftKings for PPR, and considering that you're usually looking to get a little more salary relief on that site, would you feel comfortable with either of these guys in a cash game?
Yeah, I think so. I think when you're looking at them, though, it's worthwhile to just kind of evaluate their actual track record over the long term. And to that effect, I think you probably want to lean Hurns there. We saw a 1,000-yard season out of Hurns 2 seasons ago, so it's not like he's any stranger to big-time production when everything breaks right. And I think the absence of Robinson actually makes him quite a good play. I think he'll see some ownership on FanDuel as well, and I think he'll see a lot of justifiable ownership on DraftKings. As for Lee, the promise has always been that he would step into that possession receiver role when Robinson's been hurt, or you know, before we even knew Robinson was a thing, and it really hasn't ever come to fruition. I'm going to be a week late on Lee instead of a week early, even at these cheap prices on DraftKings, but I do think Hurns has tremendous upside. I mean, we've seen some excellent games out of him. We've seen, you know, multi-touchdown games in the past. Again, a 10-touchdown season and his second overall season. I think there's a lot to like about Hurns, and I think that he'll probably...
All right, let's roll through a couple tight ends. I wrote up two groups or two pairs of tight ends that I saw with similar sort of, I don't know, range of outcomes in the same kind of price range. The first two were Jimmy Graham and Jordan Reed. Graham led the team in red zone opportunities last year. He has a great matchup against San Francisco, though I suppose Seattle maybe has some of those blowout concerns kind of at their back as well, because they're pretty big-time favorites. And then we saw Reed in week one come out, and I was a little bit worried there was a kind of a foot injury that was discussed and whether or not he was going to break out of his routes. And he was targeted enough in week one that it kind of made me feel comfortable. He had 8 targets, only converted 5 of 36. Again, the conversions across the industry were just really the story. Just no one was converting any kind of their targets. But between these two guys, sure. I do think there's a situation, especially if you're playing the Hearns's of the world and Ty Montgomery's of the world, where that are coming in that middle tier and just allow a lot of salary relief. I do think this could be a week that we see spending up a little bit of tight end for a more known commodity could be worth it. Do you have a feeling one way or the other on Graham or Reed?
Well, it's interesting. I think it's nice to see those prices come down on these guys to, you know, pretty reasonable levels. I mean, you know, we were talking about this in week one, and it was kind of Olsen and Kelce going into week one as the, you know, heir to the safe but boring tight end throne. Both of them lived up to that in week one, and that they were boring, but they didn't appear especially safe on a points per dollar basis. So I think we're kind of fishing for the next guy there. Picking between Graham and Reed, and I'll also throw Zach Ertz into that conversation because he was a guy who actually produced during week one. I think it'll be close. You know, I think from my money, I would like to have Jimmy Graham. I think that he offers not only a reasonable amount of safety, but a lot of upside here. Like, there aren't a lot of tight ends that are their team's number one option when it comes down to the red zone. And Graham, a lot of people are going to forget, was an absolute actual monster in his past. And Reed has shown flashes, and Ertz, I guess, shows some promise. But given that pedigree, given that he's, you know, has a lot of health under his belt now, a whole offseason to rest, I think Graham could put up some decent numbers this season. I don't know, though. Like, if you had to guess between Graham, Reed, and Ertz's ownership going into week two, I understand Ertz has the matchup against Kansas City, which may not be perceived to be as good as the Rams or San Francisco. But do you think that all the Ertz buzz coming from week one?
They might. They're really close. The pricing on all these sites are really, really close this week. It made actually just choosing the guys to actually, like, I don't know, choose to write up and kind of stand by more difficult to me this week, not outside of a couple guys. But I did struggle with you know, the guys the tiers of guys that we've mentioned so far, because the pricing on a lot of these guys is just so tight. And even our system seeing this, and this is exactly why I think you're going to see ownership all over the place, because
that's true, because it's basically telling you just pick your guy, and it's a lot less of like, well, geez, I just have only 59.
Exactly, right. And like, for, you know, for our purposes, we see how finicky our system can be in terms of projections by just going up by half a target, by a quarter of a target, right? Like, if you know, the difference between a quarter of a target would be half a target would be Ertz being projected for more than Jimmy Graham this week, right? It's all, that's all it takes. And like last week, that wasn't the case, because it was like so obviously Bell and Johnson were just so far above everybody else that, like, you know, giving, you would need to give, like, you know, Ezekiel like six more carries or something like that in our system to, like, to boost him.
Right, the rest of
exactly. Like, that's not the case this week. And if we figure that a lot of people are using the same kind of information, there's only so many ways that you can kind of slice this information up. These kind of little half carries, half targets, quarter targets kind of stuff is going to make a huge difference. And yeah, no, it's like, it's hard to not write a guy like Ertz up. He looked great, right? And so, you know, if we had him for something like 7.5 targets instead of 7, then he would be the guy I would have written up. And it all kind of just comes very close. And look, and this is why I say, of all weeks, this is the week where we kind of do reserve the right to, like, say that our Sunday picks may look a little different than the baseline that we're setting out for you on Wednesday, right? I don't usually like to hedge that much because, like, so for instance, Ty Montgomery's not going to change. He's going to be there. I'm not sweating that. But some of these other guys that we're seeing ownership percentages, at least in our system, a little all over the place, these are the ones that we could see change as the week goes on. One more thing, I want to go back to one thing about running back. I know I didn't mention Cohen, and I want, you know, he's a guy that we'll discuss in our game by game breakdown in terms of like what his ownership is going to be in place like DraftKings, where he was clearly the best. I don't want anyone to think I forgot about him. I didn't. I did not write him up because I do not see him as a cash game play. Some other people are going to probably see that differently. He's another guy that could change. Like, if he ends up slotting into the receiver, like if they ran him out of receiver routes. I saw someone tweet about this morning. They ran Cohen out of receiver sets. More, I think, 5 total times. If he's the new receiver, like that, now that Kevin White is down, my opinion on that is going to completely change. So this is why it's so good, why you just kind of need to follow news. And this is where beat writers actually probably are a little bit helpful, like the guys that are watching practices, to be able to know where some of these guys are lining up. So that's another piece of information that could change. We're going to get out of here. The last two tight ends I wrote about, you can real read about them on the site. Ebron and Clay, both coming in solid Ebron's got a good matchup coming off week one. Clay is coming off a strong week one, with not as good of a matchup facing that linebacker core of Carolina. So you can read some of my reasoning on that. And then defense, special teams, whatever. I made a list of some of these teams because who really wants to write about these teams? There's a ton of bad teams this week.
Yeah, we'll go through all that in the game-by-game breakdown too. So that, you know, that tends to be the you know, the flagship podcast of the week that will come on Friday.
All right, we're going to get out of here. DFSR.com/NFL. Still time to get a free 3-day trial to our projection system. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, MLB, NFL, NBA when the time comes. And that's free for 3 days. And for now, $29.95 a month, but not for long, now that we're going to get off our asses and actually raise the price on that. So we will be back again later in the week talking game by game breakdown. Buddy, enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah, buddy.